reveals to us that we are all part of things much, much larger than any individual. Wow, Cade thought. The king of Thailand is a hippie. Here, neuroscience can take direction from Buddhism. Individual minds matter. Yet in an age where billions of minds are webbed through technology, where information can travel from one person on one side of the globe to a billion on the other side of the globe in a heartbeat, there are other layers of cognition which matter. Everything important in our world requires the efforts of large numbers of individuals. Indeed, to overcome our planet's most pressing problems, we are required to think not as individuals, not even as nations, but as a single humanity. Like Einstein, Cade thought, the problems we currently face can't be solved at the level of thinking that created them. Rama the Tenth went on. Yet the dominant paradigm of neuroscience is still that of the individual brain. That is only the beginning of the understanding of the human mind, not the end product. If I have one wish for this conference, it is that a few of you would rethink your work through a new lens, a new paradigm. That all of the connectedness of all brains and all minds on Earth, both the connectedness that already exist. Here the king paused. And the even greater connectedness that we'll develop in the coming years as neuroscience and neurotechnology progress. Greater connectedness that we'll develop? Thought Cade. Is he talking about brain-to-brain communication? About Nexus? For now, I thank you for listening to the thoughts of a layperson. As both a Thai and a Buddhist, I welcome you to Thailand, and I open these proceedings. He momentarily bowed his head. The orange-robed monks in the audience were on their feet in a moment, followed a split second later by the other Thai attendees, applauding thunderously. Cade found himself on his feet as well, genuinely surprised and impressed. Rama the Tenth again waved the crowd into their seats.
Now I have the privilege to introduce Professor Somdet Pra Ananda. He is both one of the most learned Buddhist monks in our country and simultaneously the chair of the Department of Neuroscience at Chulalongkorn University. He is also my friend, Professor Ananda.
There was applause again, seated this time, as a 60-something man in orange robes walked on stage, bowed deeply to the king and took the lectern. Somdet Pra Ananda filled in some of the details underlying the king's vision of a new paradigm in neuroscience. He showed study after study demonstrating the ways that cognition occurred in groups, that ideas could leap between minds, that individuals affected each other in deep and surprising ways. But it was his closing comments that were most provocative for Cade.
Today, the technology exists to directly connect the neural activity of one brain to the neural activity of another. As this happens, the need for a neuroscience of groups of minds will become more and more urgent. The evolution of language marked a great leap forward for our species. It boosted our cognitive abilities by webbing us together into larger, more powerful group minds. I believe that another quantum step in human cognition awaits us on the other side of direct linkage of our brains and minds to one another. Those linkages are here and are rapidly spreading. To understand and peacefully direct the transformation they represent, we must try to recreate neuroscience through the paradigm of groups of connected brains, and we must do so immediately. Thank you.
There was applause again, this time originating from scientists and monks as one. Cade found himself absent-mindedly drumming his fingers on his slate. Ananda was definitely talking about Nexus, Cade thought, or something like it. Are people in Thailand working with it? Does the king support it? He had a lot to think about. People were filing out of the hall. He stood up to find his way out, still lost in thought. A tall Thai student with red spiky hair bumped into him in the crowded press for the doors.
Oh, sorry, man.
No prob, Cade replied.
Hey, nice t-shirt.
Cade looked down at his chest. He was wearing his favorite DJ Axon shirt, the one with Rangan's face and alternating sine waves superimposed over a brilliantly blue glowing neuronal protrusion, obviously about to pulse forth enormous energies, presumably in the form of sick beats. He chuckled,
Yeah, thanks. He's a friend.
No way!
The student replied.
You know DJ Axon?
Cade grinned. Yeah, he's a lab mate. We're both in the Sanchez lab, UCSF.
That is so cool, man! He makes awesome music. We listen to his mixes all the time.
The student held out his hand.
I'm the wrong.
Cade took it. Cade, he replied.
You coming to the neuroscience student's mixer tomorrow night?
I hadn't really made any plans.
You should come,
Narong said. He handed Cade a flyer.
We're putting it on. Thai Neuroscience Students Association. I'm the secretary.
I'll think about it, Cade said.
Yeah, man, it'll be fun. It's at a bar downtown. It'll be the most awesome thing happening in the cook tomorrow night. And no professors allowed,
Narong laughed. Cade laughed despite himself. What about American spies, he thought. I'll think about it. They'd reached the doors.
Right on, man. See you tomorrow night.
Narong patted Cade on the arm and was off. Sam was waiting outside the doors, studying the program on her slate. She looked up as Cade approached.
How'd you like the plenary?
I think Ilya would have loved it, he said. Sam nodded.
Yeah, you're probably right.
What did you think of it? Cade asked. Sam seemed to think about that for a moment.
Idealistic?
She replied.
A little scary?
She paused for a moment longer.
A lot naive?
Cade shrugged. Why did I ask? He thought. What now? Cade asked. Sam shrugged.
I'm going to check out some of the talks on the augmentation track. Good to keep up on that sort of stuff. We don't have to see the same talks.
Cade was a little surprised. He'd expected Sam to keep a closer eye on him. Sure, and, I got invited to this thing tomorrow night. Cade handed her the flyer. What do you think? Sam looked it over, front and back, shrugged.
Looks like fun to me.
They parted ways. Cade saw talk after talk, most of them quite fascinating. He chatted with scientists from across the globe, tried to keep track of their names and what they were working on. By 5 p.m., Cade's head was full, and jet lag was making his eyelids heavy. He told Sam he was heading back to the hotel for a nap and would meet her at the opening reception tonight. He took the Bangkok subway instead of a tuk-tuk on the way back. It meant he had to walk a few blocks in the muggy heat, but it was less nerve-wracking than an open-sided vehicle in the suicidal Bangkok traffic. The hotel lobby was a blessed oasis of cool air. Cade could feel the sweat under his shirt and on his brow begin to condense immediately. He took the elevator up and carted himself into his room. He tossed his new conference tote bag into one corner and kicked off his shoes. The bed was freshly made, with a pair of mints and a folded card sitting on the pillow. Cade popped one of the mints into his mouth and opened the card. It was a comment card where he could rate the service. Cade was about to toss it when something odd happened. The text on the card disappeared, and new text appeared line by line.
Cade, act natural. This message will appear and then disappear in 30 seconds. I have the means to extract you from your current situation. I can provide a new identity and a clean getaway. Other paths will end with you in an ERD prison or dead, regardless of what they may have told you. You are too dangerous for them to allow to wander freely. If you're ready to get out, choose very unsatisfied on the overall experience line of this comment card. I will then provide additional instructions. Assume your phone and all net access is monitored and that your clothes and self are bugged. Make no mention of this via any medium. This text will now disappear. Fill out the comment card to avoid suspicion. Watts.
Watts.
Watts! Watts! He was alive! He was here.
Cade went back and read the note a second time, the words disappearing as he did so. The original hotel evaluation appearing once again on the page. His heart was pounding. He activated the Serenity package to calm himself, hoping that Sam hadn't noticed his sudden burst of excitement, and took the card over to the small writing desk. He found a pen on the desk, filled in other parts of the evaluation as he thought furiously. Is the ERD really going to jail or kill me, no matter what? Room. Price/value. He chose satisfied.
How do I know this is really from Watts?
Room. Comfort. very satisfied.
Could this be a trick? An ERD test? But then why say that I'll be killed or jailed either way?
Room, cleanliness, satisfied.
If the note is real, can Watts really get me away?
Room, appearance, very satisfied.
But nothing's changed. If I run, it's jail for Ilya and Rangan and dozens of other people. They're all counting on me.
Room, bathrooms, satisfied.
Shit! Fucked if I do, fucked if I don't.
Staff, friendliness, satisfied.
No, it's other people who get fucked if I run. People I care about.
Staff, efficiency, satisfied.
Well, shit.
Overall service? Cade's pen hovered over the line. It was really no choice at all. Maybe he would end up in jail or dead if he stuck with this mission. But if he bailed, friends of his would end up in jail for certain. He had to take the chance. The ERD held all the cards right now. Overall service? Satisfied. Cade sighed. It was the right choice. He stripped off the rest of his clothes, swallowed the other mint, and collapsed into bed.
Watts, how do I reach him? Is he here just for me? Shit, shit, shit!
He rolled over and closed his eyes. Cade knew what Watts had gone through, how the experiences he'd had, experiences made possible by Nexus, had changed him. He knew his friend believed that Nexus could change people, that it could end wars, that it could be a technology to make the world a better place. But not everyone was like Watts. Not everyone would respond that way. Most wouldn't be willing. And Nexus 5 just wasn't ready. It was too dangerous to put into most people's hands. It would be too easy to use it to control people, to abuse them. A scientist is responsible for the consequences of his work. As his dad had told him over and over again, Cade wasn't going to have some of the possible consequences on his head. Watts, if that was Watts, shouldn't have come. He was just putting his own life at risk. Sleep came at last, briefly, but his dreams brought him no comfort. 14. Surprising Interactions. The opening night reception was held in the ballroom of the Queen's Sirikit Convention Center. Scientists milled about in shirt sleeves and the occasional tie, mixing with orange-robed monks and formally dressed serving staff. Cade could feel Sam down the Nexus link across their phones. She was here somewhere, sharp and alert. Cade got a beer with one of his drink tickets and wandered about. He chatted with half a dozen scientists on a range of topics. Neuroplasticity, the effects of religion on the brain, the similarity in neural impacts of music, drugs, and meditation, the theoretical limits of human intelligence. Someone walked past him, and he got a view of Sam. She was chatting with Narong, wine glass in hand, big smiles on their faces. Narong said something, and she laughed. She put a hand on his arm, said something back, and then turned towards the restrooms. Narong watched her go, eyes glued to her ass. "You have an admirer."
"Don't scare him off."
"Don't you have work to do?"
"That's work, Cade. Your new buddy Narong is a known associate of Suk Pratnung. That name ring a bell?"
"As in Ted Pratnung?"
"Suk Pratnung is Tanum Pratnung's nephew. He's also involved in Nexus distribution himself, we think."
Tanum Ted Pratnung, the Thai drug dealer, the one they'd said was possibly the largest dealer of Nexus on the planet, the one pictured in the photo with Suyong Shu in Thailand. Narong was connected to his nephew. "You couldn't have mentioned this earlier?"
"I didn't know until just now."
"Huh?"
"Narong just matched an unidentified voice print that we have tagged as belonging to an associate of Suk's."
"Are you seriously voice printing everyone you talk to?"
"Yes, matching all the faces if we can, too."
"You people scare me."
"The people at this conference scare me a lot more."
Cade wandered on. And then there was Suyong Shu, tall and elegant, surrounded by a gaggle of other neuroscientists, holding court, a large smile on her face and a glass of wine in her hand. Someone in the crowd said something, and she arched an eyebrow. Her charisma was evident even from across the room. There was something about her, an intensity, a ferocity in the eyes and the smile and the laugh. It sent a chill up his spine. Cade was about to turn and walk away when Shu's eyes passed over him, and she raised a hand to wave him over. Cade felt his chest tighten. He'd practiced this 50 times. He could do this. Cade activated the Serenity package, tuned it up halfway. He strolled towards the crowd around her, a relaxed smile on his face. As he walked, he sent a single message to Sam, then suppressed all Nexus transmit functions within his brain. Mind-to-mind contact was to be avoided if at all possible. Cade got within earshot in time to hear Shu finish a thought in British-inflected English.
"Opening plenary was refreshingly far-sighted. The Thai are very lucky to have this leadership."
The crowd had formed a ring around her and someone else, a well-dressed male. Cade knew that face. Arlen Franks, director of the American National Institute of Mental Health, the source of the bulk of Cade's funding.
"The opening speakers were talking about technology that's illegal," Frank said. "Post-human technology, Professor Shu. They were embracing it."
"They were talking about a very real transformation, Dr. Franks," Shu replied. "An inevitable one. Ignore that all you want. I, for one, applaud them."
Definitely, Cade thought. That was the most interesting talk all day.
"Scientists have to show respect for the law, Professor," Franks replied.
"Perhaps the law should show respect for science instead, Doctor."
"Hear, hear," someone said behind Cade.
"We have an ethical responsibility," Franks began.
"Ethical?" Shu cut him off. "Laws that keep humanity chained and limited are ethical?"
"They keep us human."
Shu raised an eyebrow.
"And who decides what's human?"
"More than 100 world leaders decided when they signed the Copenhagen Accords."
"More than 100, Shu exclaimed. "And politicians at that. Oh, that makes me feel so much better."
A ripple of laughter went through the audience. Cade found himself chuckling. Franks pursed his lips in frustration.
"Dr. Franks,"
Shu went on more quietly,
"I agree with you that as scientists we must act ethically, but surely that means acting for the greatest good. The laws that exist now inhibit our ability to do so. There's so much we could do with more leeway in our research. There's a tremendous amount in medicine and even more in augmentation. Who says that the current human condition is the right one? We could elevate ourselves. We could make a better world. We could give billions the choices of who and what to become, rather than trusting your more than 100. Our fear has crippled us."
"Hear, hear," Cade thought to himself. Franks downed his drink. His face was flushed.
"If you were in my country, Dr. Shu, you'd find your funding cut off pretty quickly with talk like that."
Cade frowned. A disapproving murmur went around the crowd. Shu smiled faintly. She shook her head.
"Then I should be glad that I'm not in your country, Dr. Franks."
She nodded to him.
"Good evening to you."
The crowd around them began to disperse, dismissed by their queen. Shu turned to Cade.
"Mr. Lane, I believe?"
She stepped towards him, hand outstretched. Cade smiled, took her hand, shook it.
"It's an honor to meet you, Dr. Shu."
She smiled at him.
"I've heard a lot about you. I'm looking forward to seeing more of your work."
"Thank you."
"What did you make of that little exchange?"
she asked. "I agreed with you 100%. Shu nodded. He was ready for it when her mind reached out for his. She was probing gently, feeling for him, mentally caressing the space between them. Cade kept the nexus in his brain locked down tight, let nothing leak back out. She said,
"Cade, would you have lunch with me tomorrow? I'd like to discuss your work and where you want to go with it."
"My published work?" Cade wondered. "Or Nexus 5?
"I'd be honored."
"Oh, good,"
Shu said.
I see a lot of potential in you. I think you could go very far indeed.
Her mind brushed his lightly, and he found himself thinking of what he could become, of his potential, of where they could take Nexus, of augmenting his intelligence, of gaining the clarity and speed of thought that would allow him to unravel any problem, of a mind slipped free of the shackles that constrained it. He nearly gasped, caught himself instead. It was just a single flash of what he could become, seen through Shu's eyes.
"I will not respond," Cade told himself. "There is no Nexus here." He wanted it, wanted to become what she was showing him, wanted to be free to improve upon himself, to become post-human. He ached to reach out to her in turn, fought to control that urge.
"I'll have my driver pick you up at noon, Cade, just out front."
"Can't wait," he replied. Even with the Serenity package, Cade needed a drink after his encounter with Shu. She moved on to work the crowd. He headed for the bar. He relaxed as the distance between them grew, allowed the Nexus in his brain to return to full transmit and receive mode, cranked the Serenity package down to a 1 out of 10. He felt Sam in his mind again, curious, but waiting until after the event to debrief him. What would he tell her? That he agreed with Shu? That she was even more seductive in person than she was as a remote figure? That he wanted what she was offering? That he'd felt her mind brush against his? Cade shook his head and stepped into the queue for a drink. This time he wasn't prepared when it happened. Another mind brushed against his. Cade had an impression of still water, a deep, deep tranquility, the solidity of earth, a quiet amusement. And then surprise. The mind had felt him as well. It was behind him, and then it disappeared. Cade turned. Professor Somdet Pra Ananda was there in the drink line, hands folded in front of his ceremonial robes, his black eyes studying Cade intently. Cade stared back, mouth agape, dumbfounded. Was Somdet Pra Ananda currently under the influence of Nexus? Here and now? Ananda broke the silence.
"Young man, what is your name?"
His voice was sonorous, hypnotic. It was a voice that took its time, a voice full of patience and command. "I'm Cade. Caden Lane. Your Eminence?"
"Professor Ananda will do, Caden Lane."
Ananda slowly scanned Cade with his eyes, taking in details.
"You're American."
He pronounced it as a fact, not a question. "Yes, sir, I am."
"Your clothing is disrespectful."
Sorry? I didn't mean any disrespect. It's just that my lab mate is a DJ, and..." Ananda cut him off.
"The line behind you is moving, young man."
Cade turned, saw that a gap had opened, took a few steps to catch up, turned back to face Ananda.
"What did you think of the opening plenary this morning?"
Cade took a breath. "I agreed with you and the king almost completely." Ananda smiled. He nodded, almost to himself.
"Your turn."
"Pardon?" Cade replied.
"The bar."
Ananda gestured with his eyes.
"It's your turn."
"Oh!" Cade turned and asked for a beer, reached into his pocket to fish out his other drink coupon, fumbled for a moment before he found it, gave it to the bartender, turned, and Professor Somdet Pra Ananda was gone. He blinked in surprise, peered around. No sight of the elder monk.
What the hell?
Reception was starting to wind down, he saw. Sam sent him a chat message asking if he was ready to head back. He was. They took a tuk-tuk back to the hotel. The traffic was lighter. The heat remained oppressive. Cade was too jet-lagged to care about the heat, too pensive about the day's events to worry about being spilled into traffic.
"Show me the conversation with Shu."
Cade sighed. There was nothing for it. He opened to her, let her experience his memories of the conversation with Shu.
"Good. It's a good sign that she's asking you to lunch. Just stay cool. Use that package in your head if you have to, and remember what's riding on this."
Cade looked out of the little motorized rickshaw, watched Bangkok slide by in chrome and neon. The deeper he got into this situation, the more confused he was. Sam could sense his mood. Oh, well. At the hotel, Sam walked Cade to his room. At the door, she offered him reassurance.
You're going to do great tomorrow. Just be yourself.
Cade nodded. Yeah, I'm fine. Just tired. He was tired. Sam squeezed his arm and headed off to her room. Cade slipped into his own and sank down onto the bed, his mind spinning.
Watts. Shu. Ananda. The ERD. What the hell's going on?
15. Replay. Sam sat in Lotus on the floor of her own room down the hall of the Prince Market Hotel, reviewing the day. Her surveillance devices detected no new bugs on Cade or in the room, no unusual behavior on the hotel net. Typical distribution of foot and elevator traffic within the hotel, on their floor, and just outside their doors. Typical time spent in their rooms by the maids. With no unusual behavior, no flagged individuals detected by face printing at the conference or the hotel. Still, Sam was worried. There had been two bursts of surprise from Cade over the course of the day. What were they? The first had happened around 5:20 p.m., just after he'd reached his room. She went back to the feed from the bugs in Cade's room, played the video. The room was still and silent. The bed was made, two mints on the pillow bracketing a comment card. Cade entered, tossed off his conference tote and shoes, ate one of the mints, filled out the comment card, ate the second mint, and then lay down for a nap. She called up her support team, requested a sweep of Cade's room tomorrow morning after they'd left for the conference. Someone would do a more detailed scan for bugs, transmitters, or anything else unusual. They'd pick up the comment card and the mint wrappers for analysis while they were there. The second incident seemed more straightforward. She'd made a note of the time when she felt it. She scanned through camera data from the conference center, found that time. It had been just moments after Cade had walked away from Shu. He'd gotten in line at one of the bars, and then Professor Somdet Pra Ananda, coming from another direction, had gotten in line behind him. Cade had turned, presumably at something Ananda had said, and they had had a brief conversation. Had Ananda said something that had shocked Cade? She found another camera angle where she could see the senior monk's face, zoomed in so it filled a frame, projected it onto the wall. She zoomed in on Cade's face, projected that in a giant frame next to Ananda. Then she synced the audio from the bugs on Cade, played it, watched their faces. Ananda stepped into line behind Cade, eyes fixed forward, lips pressed together in that perpetual, serene half-smile the senior monks wore. And then, the conversation was short, hardly more than a few words. Nothing in it seemed particularly shocking. Sam looked at the times again. Interesting. It was hard to say the exact sequence of things, given that it had taken her a few seconds to react. Even so, it seemed as if the sense of surprise might have come before he turned around and had his brief conversation with Ananda. Sam rewound the clock, added a third wall frame with a wider view of the area, played the scene again, one-quarter speed, with the two shots in sync, time-stamp displayed at the bottom of each. Ananda stepped into line behind Cade. His face was impassive, his mouth closed. He said nothing. Cade turned. Why? And as he turned, Ananda's eyes moved, changed from the faraway gaze of someone lost in thought or taking in all around him to the near-set focus on an object in one's immediate foreground. A second passed. The time stamp Sam had noted was on the screen now. Another second passed. Only then did Ananda's mouth open. Sam cued the audio from one of the bugs on Cade.
Young man, what is your name?
And then another interesting thing happened. Cade reached the front of the line and ordered his beer. While he fumbled, Ananda simply walked away, not even asking for the water or juice the monks were drinking. Sam zoomed out, stitched together two more cameras. Ananda walked briskly, head turning this way and that, apparently searching, until he spotted a particular monk. Nearly 6 feet tall, thin, angular, with a large hooked nose. They spoke a few words. The tall, hook-nosed monk bowed, turned towards the bar where Cade and Ananda had spoken, and walked briskly there. Cade was nursing his beer a few feet away from the bar now. The unidentified monk stepped towards the edges of the room, outside Cade's peripheral vision, his face turned towards Cade, and waited. By this point, she would have been asking Cade if he was ready to go. She watched it happen. Cade kept his eyes down on the floor. He looked lost in thought. In reality, he was lost in a chat conversation with her. And then he looked up, set his beer down on a table, and walked towards the exit to meet her. She zoomed out again. The monk followed discreetly. He had a clear view when Cade and Sam met and then walked out together. The monk paused for a moment. A few seconds later, he followed them out the door. Sam switched to an external camera. She watched herself flag down a tuk-tuk. She and Cade climbed into it, and off they went. The unidentified hook-nosed monk climbed into the next one, and it took off in the same direction. Fuck! That was 20 minutes ago. He could be inside the hotel right now.
First, secure the tactical situation.
Nakamura had drilled that into her. She felt for Cade. He was asleep, calm. Videos showed him passed out on his bed, clothes on. Hallway cams, empty. Stairwells, lobby, elevators. No orange-robed monks, no bald men. A lot of people sitting and chatting in the bar. She took control of Cade's door, instructed it to throw the safety bolt until she overrode it. Next, she sealed the stairwell doors and locked the elevator out of this floor, set alarms on them directed to her slate. Sam grabbed the monk's face and a clip of him walking from the video feeds and forwarded them to the CIA demon in the hotel net, told it to watch all cameras for that individual, any bald man, any monk. She instructed it to spawn a new watcher and sent it digging from the present back through time to find any telltales in the hotel logs. And then she rewound the hotel's lobby and external cams, watched herself and Cade arrive. There they were, climbing out of a tuk-tuk, walking through the lobby into the elevator. She waited. No additional tuk-tuk appeared. No monk walked through the lobby. The demon returned. In 18 months of data from all cameras in the hotel, it had 8,572 instances of orange-robed monks and zero of this monk. Nor were there any hits in the past 20 minutes. He was not in the building. Sam relaxed, fractionally. He had followed them, it seemed, but had not come in. Or if he had, he was much more than a normal monk. She took a breath. 40 seconds had passed since she'd realized they'd been followed. They'd elicited attention of some sort, but immediate danger was likely low. She called her support team, debriefed Nichols quickly. He agreed with her assessment. They'd attracted attention, but were likely safe. Even so, he sent two of the local contractors into the lobby as backup. Okay. At this point, attracting attention was the greater risk. She unlocked the stairwell doors and let the elevators reach her floor again. She left Cade's door locked and bolted, and alarms to alert her any time someone approached their floor. The support would be here soon. She doubted there was a risk. Something had drawn Ananda's attention to Cade, and he'd wanted to learn more. That did not spell an imminent assassination attempt.
When seeking to understand, go breadth first.
That was Nakamura again. Breadth first. From the top again. Cade's jolt of surprise in the late afternoon. She pulled up the feed from the bugs in his room and on his body around that time. Cade was not a good liar, not good at masking his emotions, except when he activated the emotion suppression software he had. And Sam was fairly certain he'd activated that after the jolt of surprise, either to manage his own reaction to something or to hide it from Sam. The cameras in the lobby and elevators showed no jolt of surprise. It had happened sometime after he got out of the elevator. The video from the tiny bugs in his room was low quality. She couldn't see the minor ticks that would give someone away to her in person. Audio, then. Sam closed her eyes, then played only the audio stream from the moment Cade entered the hotel. The lobby was loud, but even so she could hear his breathing and his footfalls. The transition to the elevator was obvious. His breathing stood out in the relative quiet of the small space. Then the elevator door opened. His breathing was louder now. Footfalls. Breathing. Trouser legs rubbed against each other. Pause as he reached his door. Beep of the door lock as he swiped it and it accepted him. Click of the door as it unlocked a fraction of a second later. A breath as he walked into the room. Audio from the room bugs joined the audio from the bugs on his body now. His conference tote bag landed on the floor in a light thud and a crumpling of cheap plastic. A breath as he kicked off his shoes. Foil unwrapping. The sound of chewing as he popped the first mint into his mouth. And then? A break in the rhythm. A breath missed. Chewing paused. A second passed. Another. Another. And then he swallowed and breathed again. That was it. Sam paused the playback and opened her eyes. On the slate, Cade was frozen, still standing, the comment card in his hand. She couldn't tell what was on it, but something there had caught his attention. Excellent. And the interaction with Ananda? Sam pulled up the interlocking video again. Assume it was 2 seconds between his jolt of surprise and when I noted the time, she thought. Mark the point 2 seconds earlier. She replayed the videos at 1/10 speed this time, zoomed into each of their faces in 2 projections on the wall, out to the level of their 2 bodies together in 1/3. Ananda stepped behind Cade. His face was serene, impassive, lips curved into just the slightest smile at nothing at all. The marker happened. Cade's whole face twitched. The angle of his neck changed. He inhaled sharply. A 1/4 second later, his eyes and chin moved to the left, starting the turn that would bring him around. Ananda stayed impassive, serene. No, wait, play that again. Focus on Ananda. She went backwards, forwards again. He stepped behind Cade. The time marker arrived. Cade reacted. And a 1/4 second later, there, on Ananda's face, there was the tiniest flutter. Ananda's nostrils flared by the barest margin. His eyes flicked from their 1,000-yard stare to focus on something in front of him. Cade had just barely begun his turn, only milliseconds before. There was no time for Ananda to have responded to the motion. He was responding to something else. Sam thought furiously. Ananda had been a monk for 40 years. He'd spent more hours in meditation than Sam had spent awake. He must have nearly complete control over his expression, over his underlying emotions. He'd trained himself to accept the world with equanimity, but not perfectly so. Something had cracked that long-practiced equanimity. For a split second, Professor Samdet Pra Ananda, eminent Buddhist monk and accomplished neuroscientist, personal friend to the King of Thailand, had been sufficiently surprised that something broke through that Buddhist calm and made itself known on his face in the tiniest of ways. Something to do with Cade. Neither Sam nor her support team observed the 3rd tuk-tuk, which had followed the unidentified monk, nor the large, dark-skinned man in black clothing within it. Across town, in his tiny rented room, Watts zoomed in on an image of a tall, bald, hook-nosed Thai in monk's robes. Who was this man? Why had he followed Cade and Kataranis? Whoever he was, he'd spooked the ERD. 2 military types had arrived at the Prince Market Hotel 1/2 hour ago. They were Thai men with the bulk of augmented muscle, wearing blazers in this heat, blazers large and loose enough to conceal weapons in. They were still there, sipping sparkling water in the lobby. Just 2 businessmen out late for some Perrier in a hotel lounge on a Monday night. Yeah, right. He stared at the monk's picture again.
Who are you?
This was a complication. An unknown. Watts didn't like unknowns. 16. A slight change of plans. Cade woke before the alarm. He looked at the clock. 5:47 a.m. Too early by far. He rolled over, but sleep wouldn't come. Today was the day. He'd meet Shu for lunch. What would happen then? Would she offer him the postdoc? Would she ask him about Nexus? Could she truly deliver on what her mind had hinted at? Wasn't that what he wanted? Watts. Was he really here? Was there any way to reach him? And Ananda, had that been real? Had he imagined that? Was the monk running Nexus? Cade tossed and turned. It was no good. His mind was spinning too much for sleep. He rose and threw open the curtains. It was raining outside. It would be a muggy, steamy rain, he was sure. 300 feet down from his window, Bangkok was alive. Traffic was a chaotic dance of scooters, tuk-tuk, taxis, and private cars zipping to and fro, barely avoiding collision. Pedestrians moved in rivers of human bodies down the sidewalks, holding cheap umbrellas or wearing cheaper clear plastic ponchos. Bicyclists pedaled in the rain between pedestrians and motorized traffic. Food stalls occupied every corner but one, selling noodles or sticky rice topped with mangoes. Steam rose from them. On the fourth corner stood a small temple. Even in the rain, Thai men and women streamed continually in and out of it, paying their morning respects to whatever Buddha or Bodhisattva was within. In other circumstances, he would love to explore this exotic, confusing city. He pulled open his slate instead. There was a message from Ilya asking how his trip was going, a dozen threads within the lab on various topics, and a single message from Su Yong Shu.
Cade, an unavoidable conflict has come up with lunch. Could you do dinner tonight instead? My driver can pick you up at 7 p.m. from your hotel. Best, S.Y.S.
Curious? Cade shrugged. He fired off a quick reply. 7 p.m. at his hotel would be fine. He answered a few more messages, then showered and went down to breakfast. Sam seemed unperturbed about Su Yong Shu moving their plans for the day. She ran him through the plan for interacting with Shu twice over breakfast. Cade felt as ready as he was ever going to be. Sam seemed to agree. The conference whizzed by in a blur of sessions and brief conversations. Neurooptics, laser-based neural stimulation. Hilbert transforms in deciphering neural correlates of emotion, planning and deliberative structures, neural circuitry and firing patterns. Coming out of the planning structures session and on his way to lunch, Cade caught something out of the corner of his eye and turned. There was Su Yong Shu walking towards the conference center exit with none other than Professor Somdet Prananda. How very interesting. Could that have anything to do with the encounter he'd had with Ananda the night before? Cade shrugged. It was impossible to know. At least I was bumped for someone important. He ran into Sam at the last talk of the day. Understanding volition. From dopamine to dynamic systems. They sat together. Sam seemed focused on the talk. Finally, the day's sessions were over. It was time to return to the hotel to meet Shu's driver. Sam would meet Cade later, at the neuroscience students' mixer that Narong had invited them to. If they were interested, there was a smaller after-party afterwards. Sam reviewed the plan with Cade one more time on chat, then stood there while he suppressed his Nexus transmissions. Then it was done. He was on his own. He headed back to the hotel to freshen up and iron his one button-down shirt in preparation for his dinner with Su Yong Shu. Watts crouched in the alley with the maid. They were 4 blocks from the Prince Market Hotel. Hopefully that put them outside the ERD's surveillance cordon. Hopefully. The rain had stopped, at least. Small blessing. The maid was not telling him what he wanted to hear.
"My maid, but..."
she was saying. No card.
"Ha nai tung kaya,"
he asked. Had she searched the garbage?
"Chai."
Yes, she'd searched the garbage.
"Keng long, Tai Tian."
Under the bed?
"Chai, chai."
"Hong nam?"
Had she looked in the bathroom?
"Chai, chai, mei bat."
And so it went. The card wasn't anywhere in Caden Lane's room. Could he have put it in his bag to fill out later? Why would he do that? Watts had known that there was a chance that Cade would miss the card entirely, but then it should have still been in the hotel room somewhere. Could Katarines have taken it? Why would she? Unless they detected it somehow. He felt a chill. He'd put his name on that card. It had been a risk, but he deemed it necessary in order to convince Cade to accept the offer. So the ERD might know he was here. So be it. The maid was waiting impatiently, her hand outstretched for her payment. Watts counted out the bills. 2,000 baht. He put them in her hand, but didn't let go. He locked her eyes with his.
Meetingam perm,
he told her. He had more work for her. He flashed more money in his other hand. The maid smiled, rubbed the bills he'd given her with her thumb, and nodded. Watts let her go, and she turned and was off. He stayed there in the alley after she'd gone, idly playing with the data fob around his neck. What now? Should he make his move without Cade's consent? And what were the consequences? What were they holding over Cade's head? Who would suffer? He'd trade dozens of lives for the light that Nexus 5 could shed on the world. But was it Watts's place to make that decision? Would his friend welcome it? Fuck. 2 years ago, he would have charged in, guns blazing, pulled Cade out of there whether his friend would thank him or not, and damn the consequences. Now?
We must all walk the path ourselves. We must all choose our own karma. We must all allow others to choose their own karma as well.
Cade had to choose, if at all possible. That's what Buddhism said. Every individual had to make their own choices in life. Watts couldn't impose what he thought was right on Cade, especially with so much in the balance. The ones who imposed their own will on others, they were the ones wrecking the world. Watts just needed a way to communicate with Cade to make sure he knew he had the choice at all. He needed a way to do so without being picked up by any of the cameras or microphones he suspected Cade was covered in. Without words being overheard by the inevitable microphones on Cade's body, without being picked up by the cameras in the conference center, the cameras in the hotel. Even the note had been a risk, a bet that invisibly small surveillance cams wouldn't be able to read the text. He'd find a way. And if he couldn't get confirmation one way or another? What if, in the course of Cade's 7-day visit to Thailand, Watts couldn't be sure that his friend knew the option of escape was even open? Or if the rest of the situation became too suspiciously sketchy before he had that confirmation? Then Watts would have to choose for him, and damn his karma, damn the consequences. Sam watched as Cade headed towards the conference exit. She hadn't confronted him about yesterday's events yet. She wanted him to be as calm and cool as possible for his dinner with Shu. Today had proven to be almost as interesting as last night. The conference center cameras had spotted Su-Yong Shu and Somdet Pra-Ananda leaving together at lunch. The man who'd picked them up, the driver of the car that had taken them away, was Confucian Fist, one of the clone soldiers. Between the reception last night and breakfast this morning, something had caused either Shu or Ananda to seek out a short-notice meeting with the other. What had happened since then? Shu's conversation with Cade, of course, and Ananda and Cade's brief and odd interaction in the drink line. And what would have gotten Ananda's attention? What could have surprised him last night and sent him in search of the reason Caden Lane was here? Could it have been Nexus 5 rattling around in Cade's brain at absurdly high levels? And if that were the case, how had Ananda detected it, unless he were a Nexus user also? It was 90 minutes later, while Sam was having dinner with Narong, that she received a message from her team. She discreetly read it in the corner of her tactical contact display as she listened to Narong enthuse about Thailand's bright future in neuroscience. Prelim lab analysis back. Comment card shows traces of self-destructed nanocircuitry. Likely a self-wiping message. No obvious return message from Lane, but could be hidden or encoded. So, someone had gotten a message to Cade. Who? Shu? Ananda? And what had it said? She and Cade were definitely going to have to talk. Keeping secrets from her wouldn't do. No. It wouldn't do at all. Tonight, after the mixer. Briefing. War between those who accept the limitations of humanity and those who embrace the power of the possible is inevitable. The humans will not accept us, will not tolerate us, will not leave us in peace. They will fear us for our greatness, just as Nietzsche said they would fear the Übermensch. In fearing us, they will seek to destroy us. They will be legion. We will be few. We will triumph, whatever the cost. Anonymous, Post-Human Manifesto, January 2038. In order to combat criminals and terrorists using proscribed technologies, we have little choice but to embrace the enhancement of our own operatives. We can and must maintain operational supremacy on the battlefield. As such, we will use any and all means to ensure that the capabilities of our agents are unparalleled. ERD Position Paper, November 2035. 17. VIP. The elevator door opened, spilling Cade out into the lobby. Serenity package turned up high. Best shirt on. Nexus transmission suppressed. The driver was there, waiting for him in black suit and tie, white shirt, black gloves and cap. He was Confucian Fist, a clone soldier. The driver smiled, waved, and approached him.
Mr. Yane?
He had a distinctly Chinese accent.
Yes? My name is Feng.
He tipped his chauffeur's cap to Cade.
I have the honor of being Professor Xu's driver. Would you come with me, please?
Sure. Cade followed Feng out the door. The rain had stopped, and the clouds had parted a bit. The sun had just set, and an orange glow came from the west. The car was a lustrous black opal sedan, top-of-the-line Chinese luxury. The plates were Chinese. They'd brought it all the way from China. Feng held open the rear door while Cade stepped into air-conditioned luxury. The interior was dark wood and leather. Soft classical music played. Condensation beaded on two unopened bottles of sparkling water. The windows were tinted. Feng slid into the driver's seat.
Where are we going? Cade asked.
Dongbei,
Feng replied.
Just across the Chao Phraya River. A very good restaurant there. My favorite in Bangkok.
How long to get there?
The opal pulled silently away from the curb.
Maybe 20 minutes?
Feng replied.
Fast if traffic is good.
Cade leaned back into the seat.
Thanks.
Something occurred to him.
You been here before?
He asked. Feng nodded.
Professor Xu comes to Bangkok often. I come with her.
How long have you worked for Dr. Xu?
3 years. Best boss to work for.
He grinned into the mirror for Cade's benefit.
And before that?
Feng nodded again.
Army. Special forces. Still am. Special protection unit.
Special protection unit? Cade inquired.
Oh, yeah. We take care of important people. Keep them safe.
Dr. Xu gets military protection?
Oh, yes. National treasure. Brilliant scientist. China's future depends on science. She's so important. You should be honored having this dinner with her.
No, I am. Shouldn't you be protecting her right now?
Feng laughed, glanced over his shoulder.
Yeah, maybe. But you know she's tough. Very good at taking care of herself.
He paused a moment, eyes back on the road.
How come she isn't with us now?
Oh, she had meeting earlier close to where we're going. No sense of coming back downtown.
Cade felt bold. Was it the Serenity package? Did it matter?
Have you ever had to protect her from a real threat, like someone attacking her?
Feng paused for a moment, answered more slowly.
Sorry. Can't talk about that. Operational details. Secret.
Interesting, Cade thought. Does that mean yes? Would you take a bullet for her? He asked.
What? You mean if someone tried to shoot her? Get in the way myself?
Yeah.
Feng laughed.
Hopefully, I shoot him first.
He made a pistol shape with his thumb and forefinger, held it up to show Cade, mock fired it at some target out the windshield. Cade laughed to keep it light. He felt calculating, clear.
He could get used to this state of mind. What if that wasn't an option? What if the only way you could see to save her was to get between her and a bullet? Fang made a face in the mirror.
Bad option, you know. I get shot, saves her for a second. Then what? Better hope I have backup. Otherwise, it only slow the shooter down. Better I take him out. Best defense, a good offense, you know.
He paused.
But yeah, I do it. I take a bullet if there's no other way.
Cade nodded to himself. He remembered Becker's question. Why would someone want to create hundreds of men with the same DNA? He studied Fang. Clones engineered for extreme loyalty. Same genes, same training. Identical, predictable behavior. Perfect soldiers. Do I believe it? He thought. What were you doing before the army? He asked casually.
Oh, I was just a kid before army. Grew up near Shanghai. Big family.
Fang laughed to himself.
Really big family. Lots and lots of brothers.
He laughed again, like that was the funniest thing in the world. Even through the Serenity package, Cade felt a shiver up his spine. They drove on, the orange glow of sunset warring with the neon lights coming on above them. The day's rain turned the streets into a glistening river of light, alive with reflecting reds and blues and greens and slowly deepening orange. Fang made a left turn, and suddenly the view changed. They were driving onto a bridge crossing a brown river. This must be Jiao Praya. Ahead of them, the sky reflected the final vivid rays of the recently set sun. Backlit in orange was a temple, a central structure like a pyramid with a spire rising from its apex, like the Eiffel Tower cast in massive and intricate stone, painted amber by the sunset and the lights at its base. Four smaller towers surrounded it, perhaps 100 feet tall each. The central tower was the tallest thing on the western bank of the river.
Wat Arun,
Fang said quietly.
The Temple of the Dawn.
It's beautiful, Cade said sincerely. Fang nodded.
That's where Professor Shu is now. She met us at the restaurant.
Is it close?
Right there,
Fang said, pointing at the riverbank ahead of them. The restaurant was called Ayutthaya, after the ancient Thai capital. It occupied a gorgeously ornate 3-story building situated on the bank of the river, a few 100 yards north of Wat Arun. Red-skinned, gold-armored demon statues flanked the open double doorway, their 5-foot-long swords held in 2 hands, points in the ground and hilts at their chests. Fang closed the car door behind Cade as he emerged, took him by the elbow to the maitre d'.
"Guest for Professor Shu,"
he said. A man-sized golden Buddha sat cross-legged on a stone just inside the doors.
"Oh, Mr. Lane?"
The hostess wore a long, flowing Thai dress in gold. Her hair was demurely pulled back into a bun. She was stunning. "Yes, that's me." No stutter, no stammer. His voice sounded deep and confident in his own ears. I could get used to this.
"Please come with me."
She lifted a menu and smiled winningly at him.
"See you after dinner."
That was Fang. "You're not coming up?"
"I'm just a driver, not an important person like you."
Fang gave him the merest of bows and back towards the car. Cade turned to see the hostess waiting. She smiled again and turned to lead him into the restaurant. The dress hugged her shape. The sway of her hips was intoxicating. "Keep it down, buddy. There's more than one way to lose your cool." They rounded the Buddha and the restaurant spread out before them. Floor-to-ceiling windows were cast open to the warm night. They framed the river and the grand palace beyond it. Through more windows to the south, the spire of Wat Arun rose above the west bank. Gold and orange lanterns illuminated ornate tables with tourists and Thai alike. They crossed a tiny bridge over a softly gurgling stream that ran through the dining room and emptied itself into the Jiao Praya below. She's trying to impress me,
Cade thought to himself. Shoo, she's recruiting. The hostess led him up to a rooftop deck. There was a cool breeze from the river. The sky was darkening as evening turned to night. All sorts of delicious scents assailed him. Do I want to be recruited? The hostess steered him towards a table at the southeastern corner of the rooftop, where the most majestic view of the river and temples would be. Su Yongshu rose to greet him, a wide smile on her face. She looked relaxed, confident, and elegant. Elegant and dangerous, Cade thought. Showtime. 18. Ayutthaya.
Cade, thank you so much for joining me.
Su Yongshu took his hand in both of hers. Her eyes were bright, compelling. Professor Shu, it's an honor. They sat.
This place is spectacular, Cade said.
Shu smiled again. She looked around, taking it all in.
I love it here,
she said. She gestured at Wateroon, soaring above them.
Humans create so much beauty.
Humans, Cade observed to himself. Not we, humans. The waiter came to them with water and tea, walked them through the menu. Everything looks so incredible, Cade commented. Shu smiled.
Let me. You'll be happy.
I'm in your hands. Shu rattled off a stream of high-speed Thai to the waiter, who smiled broadly, bowed, and backed away. You speak Thai, Cade noted. Shu smiled.
Talk to me about your research, Cade. I hear your paper in Science is going to be very exciting. What's in it?
Cade talked. He gave her the edited, sanitized version, with conventional nanotube filaments, software built on the models from Shu's lab. He left out all the leapfrogs that Nexus 5 had allowed them to make, all the dead ends it had allowed them to avoid. Nexus had enabled them to paint a Leonardo. They'd traced that into a crude crayon drawing, and still they were years ahead of the field. Shu asked good questions. She probed details and high-level conclusions. Cade struggled to keep up. Finally, she nodded appreciatively.
Well, I'm very impressed.
She held his eyes. Thank you. He smiled calmly, a little sheepishly. We're really proud of it. Rangan did as much work as I did. The food arrived, breaking the moment. The waiter presented each small dish with fanfare. Yum mamong, a delicious mango salad. Pad pak pong, fried morning glory. Kun kratiem, savory garlic fried shrimp. Pad pai kapau, basil duck. Pat gue de tio nu, stir-fried noodles with sliced beef. They ate family style, remarking on each delicious dish. Shu had an enthusiasm for the food that Cade found infectious. The waiter brought them fresh guava juice, cool and refreshing. As they talked, the sky darkened into full night. Their table was illuminated by the flame from the lanterns, the amber lights on Wateroon just to their south, the neon glow from the east, from the teeming city across the river. Shu shifted the conversation from food back to neuroscience, grilling him on topics all across the field. He was being interviewed. The questions came thick and fast, on topics far and wide. The neural basis of creativity, prospects for boosting human intelligence, the difficulty in uploading human minds into computers, the evolutionary basis of sleep, the limits of a human brain storage capacity, reasons for the human perception of time. The questions were all speculative, open-ended, on the frontiers of modern neuroscience. He had to synthesize, reveal hunches, sketch out possibilities based on incomplete data in the field. Shu wouldn't accept "I don't know" as an answer. She kept pushing him to take an educated guess, to explain his thoughts. It was exhilarating. He wondered if she knew the answers to her own questions. And then Cade felt it. Her mind reached out to his. He could feel her curiosity, her crystal-clear intellect. Her mind felt amazing, vast, intricate, like no one he'd ever felt before. He longed to touch that mind. But he gave her nothing. To open to her would be to reveal why he was here and who had sent him. Keep talking. talking, Cade told himself. Pretend you felt nothing. Shu watched him, her face pensive. Watts watched from a rooftop north of a UTR restaurant. He lay there on his stomach, utterly still, a scope to his eye. Chameleon wear in his clothing blended him into the rooftop. There was Cade, with someone that facial recognition software identified as Professor Suyong Shu of Zhaotong University, Shanghai. Shu was one of the top researchers in Lane's field, and an occasional dabbler with the Chinese Ministry of National Defense. What was she doing there? More troubling was the driver of that car. He'd seen that face before. He'd seen it on a very dangerous man, a man he could swear was dead. It had been in the KZ, a Chinese advisor they'd flushed out of a rebel command center. They'd taken the command post, not aware of his presence. When they discovered him, he'd fought. Fought like no one Watts had seen fight, before or since. He was dead. How could he be here? Suyong Shu gave a contented sigh. Cade could feel the sensual satisfaction of the meal emanating from her. She was not what he'd expected.
"Cade," she said, "I had an ulterior motive."